hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm Alexander Chase, this week without our host Matt Goodwin, who's on vacation. I'm joined instead by Lamar Gibson, host of Pitcherless on the Farm podcast, for a crossover event about the MLB draft, discussing the who, what, and how of it all. Lamar, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
You know, it's going pretty well so far this weekend. I have two slow pitch co-ed softball games that I was supposed to have this morning that have been rained out. So got nothing but sitting around and doing absolutely nothing on the schedule, which is just joyous.
It's a perfect day to podcast.
Something like that for sure. Yeah. I should have asked this before we got started. Where is it you're based out of?
So I'm in the southeast of the U.S. I'm in the south.
Gotcha. Okay. So you actually have to worry about the summer being hot and stuff.
I'm used to it. I'm a mid-Atlantic kid, and I'm kind of in that region still. So it's not too different than what I'm used to growing up. So luckily.
Yeah. Who is your team then? Curious. Are you Atlanta or?
I'm an Orioles fan. I grew up right outside of Baltimore City. Grew up in a little place called Randallstown, which is 15 minutes outside of the city, and diehard Orioles fan through and through.
Yeah, it always strikes me as kind of odd, not saying anything about the Orioles, which, by the way, great place to
be watching actually competitive baseball this time of year, which is an odd thing for once. It's kind of nice. I kind of like jokingly declared myself not an Orioles fan at the beginning of this year on account of I'd been living in DC for a couple years. It's getting kind of annoyed with them. I wanted to buy a Juan Soto jersey. I really wanted to buy a Juan Soto City Connect jersey. I did.
Okay.
But it strikes me as odd considering how many baseball fans there are in the South that Atlanta is kind of your only option for so much of the territory.
Yes.
Except you got all these double A and triple A teams.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense for me then that you, minor league baseball is a thing that you'd be into considering how much of it seems like it's got to be accessible for you then.
Yeah. So there is a team that is close by where I live. I wish actually I went out and saw more minor league baseball, because like you said, there are some, especially if you get to the Carolinas. There's a ton in North Carolina, and I really would love to do a trip through there and you get into Tennessee. I think also, like, definitely not to get us off on this tangent, but I think that's a big reason why, ironically connected to the Orioles, you hear a lot of talk about the Orioles moving, going to Nashville, because it from a major league standpoint, it really would break up that blockade, so to speak, that Atlanta has, that stronghold that Atlanta has on the South, because really, to your point, you have to go kind of, you know, Houston has the Gulf. St. Louis is kind of more Midwest. I think St. Louis and Kansas City are more Midwest than South. So, yeah, you really got to, you know, you really don't have anything once you get past D.C. and you're not going out west to the Gulf states. Everything else, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, the Carolinas, all that is all Braves country. So, yeah, I think the powers that be at Major League Baseball wouldn't mind having another team in the South, just to break that up. But hopefully it's not my beloved Orioles.
Yeah, the idea that Camden Yards would be empty just sounds absolutely criminal. Beautiful, beautiful park, and a park that people I know will show up to if there's a product worth watching there. So we'll for sure be talking about the Orioles a little bit later down this pod. It's just nice to know that this time of year they're only a couple games back of 500. Only four games out of the wild card.
41, nice. 41 wins as of last night. 41 wins.
Yeah. It's also really funny to know that they won. You know, we're recording Saturday morning. It's a 5-4 win against the Angels, where like Otani and Trout both had a home run and accounted for all of their RBI and just like absolutely went off. Mm-hmm. And it's the old tungsten arm joke yet again. I feel like Raleigh could see a team. Nashville could see a team, and like we wouldn't be worse for it in any way. So rooting for you to have some more professional baseball in your vicinity and everyone else, really. So cool. Well, today is a special day in both of our podcast landscapes, as we kind of roughly alluded to. I am by no means an MLB draft expert. I think that makes for kind of like a fun crossover combo where I get to step outside of my normal role while Matt is out for a couple weeks, and we get to bring you in to in kind of our parlance, play my role, which is really fun for me because I love to play stupid as often as I can. Not that Matt does, but in this case, I really get to, because I feel like much of my understanding of the MLB draft is just correcting my understanding of the NBA draft for baseball, which is a much different sport. So I feel like before we get too far, we kind of have to just, for the people who know about fantasy, who know about the majors, but don't quite get why everything seems so complicated, lay out how things work. So I have like a couple of my four dummies questions that I feel like we ought to get into before we get too far. The mechanics, I think, are the thing that kind of confused me at first. Draft order, I feel like, is the easy thing. There's no lottery. The thing I always feel like I had a hard time with is just like how long the first round goes, because I know that there's not 30 first round picks. So can you like talk us through like basically how many picks teams get and why that is, and why it seems like there's so many first rounders?
Yeah, so you're not too far off the mark as far as the number of picks in the first round. So you have 30 MLB teams, obviously. Each one, generally speaking, would have a pick. One thing, while we're on the sort of NBA, MLB comparison, as of right now, there is no pick trading in MLB. That's something that they are discussing. They were looking to get locked into this new CBA. It didn't happen, but it's still, I think, kind of being kicked around, being put back in for the next negotiations. So that's something that obviously the NBA draft does have, and we've seen it help and hurt a lot of different franchises. To get to your point about the length of draft, you also have free agent draft compensation. So you have where our comp A and comp B picks that get added into the first couple of rounds. So that's why you might have somebody that technically got picked in the first round, but it was pick number 33 instead of pick number 30, because you have these compensation draft picks that come from when certain free agents that meet a particular criteria, if they leave a team, then that team would get a compensatory pick coming back to them.
And it's, so does that pick like get taken from the team that signed the free agent? Is that how that works? Or
so it's not taken. It's just kind of, it's an additional draft pick. It's a way. So the way it's kind of explained is, and this is actually coming from MLB. So I'm going to read the MLB definition about this, the quick definition. So if a team gives a qualifying offer to a player, so they have a player, that player is a free agent, they offer that player a qualifying offer, that player declines that offer and signs elsewhere, the club that lost the player is eligible for draft pick compensation. So it's literally the MLB saying, hey, and this is all kind of in quotes because some of this is not in good faith, as we know, or we should know, but the MLB saying, hey, you tried to sign this guy. He chose not to sign with you. So instead of you just being completely out of luck, we're going to give you at least this draft pick. That's a very like dumbed down, stripped down version of this. And like I said, that's assuming a lot of good faith that's not actually out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's a good also like conceptual lead into some of the other stuff that I feel it can be confusing. And just starting with the framework that teams are not doing things in the nicest and kindest way at all times is probably always a good starting point. Yes. No new ground for either of us, I'm sure. The next thing that always kind of like confuses me, and I, viewing things through the Orioles lens that I have done in the past couple of years is kind of aided this in some ways. But the fact that teams don't always sign the best player available and that some of the top talents might go pretty far down the first round or even at the beginning of the second round, it seemed a little bit odd to me. So can you talk me through about why teams might choose to sign a lesser player higher up in the draft and kind of like a little bit of the mechanics of that?
Yeah. So like you said, with the Orioles, me being an Orioles fan, this is a big sticking point amongst Orioles fans, especially going into this year's draft. So you have, what's called signability concerns, right? And again, this is a difference between here and you. This has happened in the NBA. Again, just if we're using that as kind of like the comparison, this kind of happened in the NBA to an extent. Obviously not as frequently and not in the same ways. And especially not now with the NBA essentially getting rid of high schoolers being able to be drafted. It's kind of really shut that down. But signability concerns, if you have a player that is coming out of high school, that is, or at least is high school age, has not committed to any sort of NCAA school and is eligible to play NCAA baseball, that player has some leverage to say, hey, I actually don't want to sign with that team, or I don't want to sign for that amount of money that they're offering me. I'm actually going to go to college instead. And if he chooses to do so, he would need to remain in college for 2 years before being eligible to be drafted again. So you can say, hey, you know what? For whatever reason, and we're going to talk about somebody who may have some reasons, I'm going to go into college instead of signing with this team. I'll bet on myself in 2 years that I'm going to be able to make as much, if not even more money as a higher draft pick when I get added back to the new draft pool. So you have teams that might say, hey, we're drafting number three overall. And we have a guy that we think is going to be great. But we are concerned that the amount of money that he's going to ask for is so great as far as what we have in our pool of money, because all teams have a pool of money to sign all their draft picks. It's going to take such a large chunk of our pool that it's going to hurt us with us trying to draft some other guys. So we'll take a, like, to use your word, a lesser player that is more eager to sign for a lesser amount of money at number three, and that will save us money on the back end. So now we have more money deeper into the draft. That's something that the Orioles did in 2020, very kind of famously or infamously, depending on how you look at it, with Heston Kerstad, taking him at number two, surprised a lot of people. The Orioles proclaim, and there's really no way to prove them right or wrong, but they proclaim that if it had been a normal season, obviously 2020 was pandemic season, very shortened collegiate season, but they claim, hey, if it was a regular season, we think Kerstad was the best college bat out, and he would have shown it in a regular full season, and we would have had no problems taking him number two anyways. The fact that it was shortened, he was cheaper than some of the other options. Some people say the Orioles were just cheaping out. It did allow them to sign some other players that are also proven to be quite valuable so far in their minor leagues, like Kobe Mayo. They signed in the fourth round. He's been quite good. He was a high school pick, so there's a lot of thought that says, hey, if you didn't have the money to sign him, he would have been off the board and possibly going to college instead, because you wouldn't have had enough money to sign him. So, again, a lot of it has to assume some good faith with teams, and teams don't always operate in good faith. So it's very hard to kind of decipher, is that a smart move or is it a cheap move? Sometimes it can be both, but they're not always one and the same.
Yeah, I can kind of wrap my head around that. Is like, if you have the number two overall pick, that might give you the opportunity to kind of almost trade with yourself down to roughly the number 10 overall pick, and then get back the capacity to get some guys who might be some late firsts. And in a really uncertain environment, what's better, the best lottery ticket or more really good lottery tickets?
And that's kind of that in of itself. That's the question. That's the question that a lot of teams and a lot of these teams, the Orioles, the Diamondbacks, a lot of these teams that have been consistently picking high in the last few drafts, that's what their fans are kind of always discussing internally. That's what a lot of scouts and evaluators and analysts talk about, is that kind of exact scenario. Is it best to have that one, hey, you could win a bajillion dollars if this one guy hits, or hey, you might be able to collect multiple millions if you have a bunch of these smaller tickets, which makes more sense. And I think the draft also can dictate it. The talent that you have in the draft can dictate that as well. So if you see that, hey, this draft is kind of weak on superstar talent, then I think absolutely it makes sense to save money. Why would I go out and try to spend a bunch of it on a guy that I'm not even confident is going to be a, you know, quote unquote stud, if I could just, you know, essentially trade down to, again, use your, you know, terminology, and get somebody that's going to have just as high of a floor. I think for me as an Orioles fan, the Kerstad pick, and obviously Kerstad, for those that don't know, he had some health issues. He had an issue of myocarditis, I believe, cardiac myocarditis.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, that caused him to miss a year as well. And there was actually some concern about, like, would he be able to play baseball again? He finally made his debut. He's looked quite good, actually, this year. So things are looking up for that pick. I think my issue with that was, as good as Kerstad may have been and might be still, there was just a lot of talent in that particular draft that I thought the Orioles really could have been going after. And I just, again, the good faith or bad faith of, were they cheaping out or were they being smart? This front office led by Mike Elias is still so new that we really don't know how they are going to go about things. Are they going to be like cheapskates like some of our past front office people? Or are they really going to be as smart as they are heralded to be coming from the Astros system?
Yeah, I mean, looking back, even what they did last year, they took Colton Cowser fourth. I think people consider that to be kind of like a repeat, which are some people. And then they got
Gunnar Henderson with their first pick of the second round. Mm-hmm. And there's talk that he might be like,
he's right up there,
a top 10 prospect. Yep. He's pretty soon. So
yeah.
you can read those tea leaves as you wish in a lot of ways. Yep. I feel like I also want to bring up the Orioles to kind of help explain another like final, especially if you've read Moneyball and you think you're smart for having done that, true or not. I remember I read it in college for a class and I thought it made me really smart for about 15 seconds. I know some teams seem to have a proclivity to like draft certain archetypes of players, you know, believe that they're getting more bang for their buck if they're, for example, drafting college hitters, which has been kind of the thing that seems like the most sure ticket at the top of the draft in the past couple hard to scout seasons. Mm-hmm. Is there anything really we need to know about like differences between college hitters, high school hitters, college pitchers, high school pitchers in terms of like how teams act, or is it kind of just all mumbo jumbo and like choosing to believe something for believing something safe?
Well, it's kind of, it's like most things, is somewhere in the middle. We didn't talk about this before we started another Baseball America article that they had. We were talking about some Baseball America stuff, but another article that they had was kind of looking over the years about how those archetypes have changed, right? It used to be college pitchers, and then it was high school pitchers, and then it was kind of, so it's, mm-hmm. it's kind of always morphed again to keep that NBA track or that NBA draft sort of parallel together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Same thing that you've seen through the NBA draft, and we kind of talked about this off mic. It used to be if you were, you know, a college senior, Naismith finalist, you know, been with the team all 4 years, started three of the 4 years, you're definitely going to be a lottery pick because you're just a, you know, experienced, known winner, etc. And then in the past 20 some odd years, it was like that guy could barely get drafted at all, right? You have to be projectable. You have to be mm-hmm. Somebody that's much younger, has much less wear and tear of playing basketball. So sports, team sports especially, and I'm not as knowledgeable about the NFL, but I'm sure the NFL has gone through it as well. All of these team sports, those archetypes always morph and change. I think what you're seeing now with college hitters, and you spoke to the fact of the pandemic kind of abbreviating and shortening things, it just gives you, I think it gives teams a comfortability that there's a floor that the variable outcomes that can happen, that failure, quote unquote, or that bust, quote unquote, to use those words, mm-hmm. is either less likely or it's less damaging, right? So if a guy gotcha. Is a college bat and he's been there 2-3 years and we like what he's showing and we like the data that we're seeing from him, then, hey, if we draft him, worst case scenario is he still could be an org guy, right? We could still try to work with
him. Right.
If we draft this prep bat, this guy who's 17, 18 years old, and he's never even seen anywhere close to a professional fastball or professional, you know, breaking balls, and then we throw him in the mix and he can't hit at all, we're just, it was almost like a waste, right? We can't do anything.
Right.
I think that's the mentality, or some of the mentality with it. And I think some of it makes sense. I think that makes sense because also your development cycle changes. You can take, and we see this a lot of college bats, you can probably be more aggressive in assigning them and saying, hey, we're going to mm-hmm. throw you right into high A, because that age group and that level of competition is still kind of in line with your age group and what you've been seeing, especially if you're coming from like a Power Five school in college, right?
Yeah,
if you're coming out of
like some of these,
the SEC, if you're coming out of the SEC and you're going into high A, you're probably seeing about the same as far as if you're a hitter, the type of pitching that you've been experiencing and what you're going to see in high A. If you're 18 years old and you're coming out of, even if you're coming out of like a warm weather, known hotbed state, like a Texas, like a Florida, there's still going to be an adjustment, and trying to put you in high A is probably going to be too aggressive. We probably want you in the complex, maybe at low A if we really want to get kind of spicy with things. But that changes that development cycle too, because that's some additional possible years that it takes to get this guy ready to be valuable, even to think about the major league level.
Okay. I feel like that's a pretty good like explanation of like why you would care about a lot of those things. And I'm very grateful for that, as like I want to just overlay this little bit of knowledge that I have about other things wherever I can. And it makes a lot of sense then almost to like think of like the
to draw an example that I hope is tangible for enough of our listeners, like, remember a couple of years ago, Jalen Brunson out of Villanova, like, won like their national player of the year, great for them, and did not get drafted terribly highly, and then was just good for the Dallas Mavericks long enough to get himself a gigantic contract with the Knicks this offseason. It's like, of course this was going to happen. Of course he was good, sort of things that, you know, whenever, like, I last cared about college basketball, like, with a like a real paying attention sort of view, instead of just I watch the Final Four point of view, we're like, Thomas Robinson for the Kansas Jayhawks got drafted in like the top three at like 22 years old with no real like physical tools compared to like everything else, and was a bust. It's like, of course you're gonna have those biases lead to busts. We'll see what the next 5 years tells us about what we're stupid about currently, I'm sure.
Yeah, Jalen Brunson is like that college bat guy that we're talking about, right? It's just like, oh, he's proven, he's shown some things. Is he ever going to, is his ceiling ever going to be higher than what we're already seeing? Probably not. He's probably pretty much a complete player, right? We from Villanova, you can kind of see him, and I know we're mixing a lot of stuff, so not to confuse people, but, you know, when you have a college bat, especially if he's a guy, and we're going to talk about a couple here, who year after year, they developed, they've gotten better. By the time they get to that junior, senior year, if they stuck around for the fourth year, a lot of teams probably feel like this guy is pretty much who he is. There's probably not a lot more variation to his game. If he's not hitting for power now, maybe we can tweak something in the swing. Maybe we can look at something in data that shows us how to, you know, have him develop some more backspin. But he's probably not going to hit for much power now. If we're fine with it, then we have kind of who we have. And then it's just a matter of stacking him against the best competition level by level and making sure that he proves it until he gets to the major league.
Right.
Versus, again, some other names that we'll talk about. This guy could be anything, right? He could be a complete stud. I mean, if you think about players that we have right now, it seems like Bobby Witt Jr., Julio Rodriguez, like, these guys were guarantees, but they were not guarantees. There's definitely in the multiverse, right? We love the multiverse in our pop culture.
In your out of the park safe, right, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely a version of Bobby Witt Jr. where he gets drafted and he can't hit a professional curveball once he gets into double A, triple A realm, right? There's a version of Julio Rodriguez who has the loudest twos possible, but he can't put it all together consistently. So even though they're doing great now in our world, right, in our reality, that doesn't mean that those younger guys, those prep ballers, and we're not even talking about international draft picks like Julio Rodriguez, that those guys don't have that high variance where they could be superstars, or they could be guys that in 5 years time you say, who's that? I don't even remember who that was.
Great. I don't think we can let the listeners wait any longer to actually hear about some of these dudes. All right. Who I have spent zero time at any point in the past 2 years talking about on mic. I would like to give you some flexibility to get us started here. There are some big names I think we have to hit, and I feel like that's probably just the most reasonable place to start, because beyond that, I feel like a lot of people aren't going to pay attention to the MLB draft outside of whoever their team gets. And that's maybe like an unfortunate reality. A lot of this sounds pretty interesting, and once you like get plugged into how to pay attention to it. But let's start with the easy storylines. Who do we need to know about at the very top of the draft board?
Yeah, I mean, let's start number one with a bullet, and that's Drew Jones. And Drew Jones, if the name sounds familiar, it should. Son of Hall of Famer Andrew Jones. Of the Atlanta Braves. And to me, he seems to be closing in. You know, we're about a week out. It seems like he's closing in on being the consensus number one pick. Doesn't mean that he will be chosen number one, as we talked about, but it does seem like scouts, evaluators are pretty much coming to a consensus that he is the best player in this draft. The tools, again, if you know his father, the tools are very similar. As far as what he can do on the field, right? Can he field center field? He's an amazing center field. Defensively, he's an amazing center fielder. I think he's also played some shortstops. He's athletic, right? And that's another thing we didn't talk about with archetypes. But when you talk about high schoolers, which Drew Jones is, right, prep ballers, typically you're looking at guys that are going to be playing shortstop, or center field, because just like in Little League, they're your most athletic players. If they can play those positions well, you pretty much feel confident that you can stick them anywhere else on the diamond and they're going to be okay. Andrew mm-hmm. Jones fits that to a T. Can he hit for average? Absolutely. He's shown very good plate skills, good discipline. He's shown mechanically to be very sound, quiet setup, which I'm biased to. I don't like guys. I tend to stray away. Let me say it that way. I personally tend to stray away from guys that are very noisy at the plate, just because there's so much that goes on there. It all has to sync up every single time. And if they're off one bit, then they're missing pitches that they probably should hit. I like guys that are quiet. He's quiet at the plate, just like his dad. He's explosive, power and hitting for average. So this is a guy that brings that five tool, five category sort of persona that we tend to hear about. He's a guy that kind of illustrates that. So whether he's picked number one by the Orioles, if he goes to number two, which should, I believe, is the Diamondbacks. I should have looked at the draft order beforehand. But I believe there's the Diamondbacks. I think if he goes to Diamondbacks, the Diamondbacks are tripping over themselves running up to the podium, right, to like put his name in. Right. Because if they can have an outfield in what, 2026, 2027, that's Corbin Carroll, Alex Thomas, and Drew Jones coming up, like, yes, they're like signing us up right now.
Disgusting.
You know, let's have it. But he's not going. I don't see a world where he goes past the first three picks. I just don't see what happens. Something very bad. Let me put it that way. Something very bad, which we all hope doesn't happen, would have to happen for him to fall beyond pick number three.
So if I'm like interpreting what we said earlier about like slot and stuff, a world where he's going two or three is probably one where he talks to the Orioles. They say, here's our number. He takes that number to the Diamondbacks, or I have enough mock drafts up in front of me that I should be able to figure out who's drafting third here. Oh, that's the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And the Rangers are like, yeah, we'll just give you all of our money.
Yeah. I mean,
which I don't think is going to happen. Yeah. But like, that's probably what happens if he goes third.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially like, yeah, the negotiations with the Orioles are like, they are very adamant about what their number is, what their process is. He says, no, thank you. The Diamondbacks, maybe they say, and I don't know why they would say this, but maybe they look and say, you know what, we went prep baller last year, with Lawler, we have somebody else in mind, this is our number, but it's probably not going to be much higher than the Orioles. Again, I'm not saying that will happen, I'm just trying to work out this particular scenario.
Right, right, right.
And then he says, okay, cool, and the Rangers are like, hey, we got Josh Jung should be coming back from injury next year, he's essentially was going to be our starting third baseman, so we're like, we got there. We already committed money up the middle with Semien and Seager. Yeah, sure. Why not? Like, why would we let him fall even further? If that throws off our plans on, you know, there's a guy we had targeted in the third round that we don't have money for now, we're okay with that. We'll take Drew Jones at number three, shut up and take our money, and we'll keep it moving. So, yeah, it would have to be some sort of like very odd scenario for him to get to the Rangers and then sign. I guess there's always an outside possibility that he's very adamant about what his number is just in general. And if he's not seeing that in the first two picks, he's just not even going to negotiate. He's just going to say, hey, I'm going to stick to my commitment, which I believe is Vanderbilt, and just go to college. And I'll see you guys in you know, 2 years.
Yeah,
that's always a possibility. That's the bit of leverage that a guy like Drew Jones would have. Again, I don't see that happening, but it definitely could.
I think it's also worth noting, we've seen just a ton of kids of former successful major leaguers have outstanding debuts mm-hmm. and like be good immediately. I have to imagine that combination of early access to excellent coaching and facilities and then also probably a good amount of you have the money available to say no leverage landing you with a good organization are things that would help you to succeed immediately. So let's say he doesn't want to play for any of these three teams because he thinks they're all awful. Yeah. That is kind of quietly a piece of like leverage he has because he doesn't need the money, I'm sure.
Yeah, the last, and I promise I'll try to make this the last basketball parallel, but years ago, Joakim Noah came out of Florida, and that was kind of the conversation around him was they won a championship at Florida his junior year, and he was like, well, he's definitely going to be a top five draft pick. He's coming out. And he's like, no, I'm staying in college. I want to run it back. I like the guys. And everybody say, well, that's dumb. He's going to lose money because it's a, another year. What if he gets hurt? And then it's like, yeah, but his dad was a tennis pro. Like, he's not hurting for money. He's okay. Like, mm-hmm. And it's that sort of leverage. Like you said, if you're a Vlad Jr., if you're Fernando Tatis, you know, if you're, like you said, the sons of major league stars and superstars, yeah, you're probably, you know, Cabrian Hayes, you're probably doing okay. I don't want to count other people's money, but I assume you're probably going to have been doing all right. And also, it's the knowledge of how these negotiations go. So having having somebody like Andrew Jones to talk about, like, hey, how did you negotiate your contract when you went and signed with the Rangers, right? How did you negotiate your contract when you were talking to Atlanta as an 18-year-old, right? Because, like, you want to talk about somebody that knows about being young, being a superstar almost from the get-go, it would be Andrew Jones. Like, he would know. He would have some experience and some knowledge to give you. So being his son, not only do you have the bloodlines, not only do you have the access, like you said, to really good coaching and things of that nature, you have access to somebody who really has been through these negotiations and understand how front office people work, how they think and how they view you as a player and value or don't value you. So, yeah, that's really good knowledge to have to leverage off of.
All right. I feel like just timing wise, we probably need to hit a quick break here shortly, but I do feel like that really helps us to like look at a couple of these other guys potentially through like a helpful lens as well. I know that they are not Drew Jones for a lot of other reasons, and I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about them. But we're going to take a real quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, and we're back. Let's hear really quickly about a couple of the other guys at the top end of the draft board that are worth knowing. I know there's much less certainty where they'll land, relatively speaking, and what kinds of players there all be. So who do you want to start with among the other consensus front half of the draft guys?
Yeah, so I got four names here. So I'm going to go with this. I'm going to finish up on the high school side with talking about Tamar Johnson first. So let's talk about Tamar Johnson. Tamar Johnson might be a name that some listeners may know and may be surprised, especially if they've heard the name, but haven't necessarily been following up on the draft process, might be surprised to hear, like, why is he not the number one overall pick? Because when I heard his name, it seemed like everybody was in love with Tamar Johnson. I think Tamar Johnson suffered, and I use that word very loosely, I think he just suffered from overexposure, which happens with draft picks, where you're just guys that are out in front of the pack early on. So we were talking about Tamar Johnson like back in March as being potential number one. Scouts, evaluators, they just dig into him over and over again. And after a while, it's just like, it's almost you get tired of him, for lack of better words. Like, I don't really know a better way to explain it. It's just sound like, yeah, okay, we know. But, like, there has to be somebody else. I think also Drew Jones, his past season, answered some questions that I think some people had enough that they wanted Drew Jones around that number one pick. They weren't sure. And him having a very, very successful 2022 high school season helped cement them wanting to put him up in that number one overall area. I think for Tamar Johnson, he still is seen as very outstanding. A great hitter is what you're going to see if you read any sort of scouting or any sort of evaluation, is that he has some elite hit tool ability as far as the ability to not only drive the ball, but how he controls the bat through the zone, sprays the ball around the field. I will be honest, and I'm going to say something that might get me into some hot water with some people, but
please do.
I watched Tamar Johnson, and mechanically, and I'm really no expert here, so just understand that. But mechanically, as well as his body type, which I don't like talking about kids' body types, is kind of weird, but like,
yeah,
those two things give me some concern. He's a very stout guy already. It seems like second base is where he's going to go currently. And my thing is, if he continues to fill out, because again, he's somebody who's 18 years old. If you think about when you were 18, think about when, you know, you being 25 or 30.
Very skinny.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, you continue to grow.
I am not anymore.
There you go. So if you continue to grow, if he continues to fill out, then it's like, okay, where else can you move him? He does not have the range to play shortstop already. He has decent arm strength, but probably not strong enough arm to be moved to third. So then it's like, is this a guy who becomes a little positionless, or is like a left fielder, second base sort of hybrid type of guy? If that's the case, that hit tool really has to remain at, has to be and remain at that elite level for him to really essentially pan out as far as the value for him to be a top 10 draft pick, which I think he still will be drafted in the top 10. So that's the body type piece that gives me a little bit of pause.
Okay. That also, I should note, makes a lot of sense when you're talking about the has to be a shortstop or center field guy to like to work.
Right. And it's just like when you're not, it to be clear, when you're not, it doesn't mean that you're terrible. It just I always look at it like this. Let me simplify this all the way down. When I look at any sort of prospect, wherever they're coming from, I look at, can they give me the biggest margin for error? Right. Because as things get more difficult, right, you start at rookie ball, you go to low A, you keep going up levels, competition is going to get harder, right? Whether you're pitching or hitting, everything is going to get more difficult. Everything is going to get harder. Your rates and ratios are going to change. The negative things are going to increase. The positive things are probably going to decrease. If you give me the biggest margin for error up front, when those things start to narrow down, you still can be a good to possibly great player. If you start with very narrow margins, you have to walk a very, very fine line to keep that to be playable. And that to me is just like, I'd rather not. Now, I'm thinking this from a fantasy standpoint, to be fair. This is we're talking about real life drafting versus fantasy. That's a little bit different. But that to me is, give me the guy that has the most margin for error. Tamar Johnson, like I said, defensively doesn't really have that. Offensively, again, the hit tool, every single scout, every single evaluator says elite. The one bugaboo that I have is I talked about noisy setups. I talked about a lot of movement. He has a little bit of this sort of bat cock and wiggle that he has as he goes into his load and then into his swing that I'm just not a huge fan of aesthetically. Maybe it's an aesthetic thing. It's obviously that seemed to work for him, right? So it's far, you know, for me to tell him that he should change it. But I just look at it and say, okay, cool. Is this guy going to be like Tony Gwynn-esque? And not to say he's going to be Tony Gwynn, like the actual player, but in that sort of caliber of he's spraying the ball around. He has great play discipline. So OBP is going to be very high. But the power may not be incredibly high. You know, you're talking about a guy that might be 12 to 15 home runs. And again, just trying to put it all together. Second baseman who's hitting you 12 to 15 home runs. Then that means he has to really be getting on base, but he's not a burner, so he's not going to give you a lot of stolen bases. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's just trying to figure out where he all fits in and what type of player he can be.
Yeah.
To me, I think all of that is the question of Tamar Johnson for me. I'm still very excited to see where he goes. I think depending on the team that drafts him, it could be very interesting to see how they develop him if he lands, especially on the bottom side of that top 10. You know, number 7, number 8, I've seen him kind of float around there. So that's Tamar Johnson. That's just kind of to put a button on that. I think that's why Tamar Johnson has dropped a little bit in some of these mock drafts. And those are some of the questions that I have about him.
Yeah, the story you tell about him dropping sounds, let's beat the NBA draft comparisons to death if we can here. Jaden Hardy was a guy who signed with the G League Ignite and got just a ton of like
reps against basically like better than college player, you know, like defenders, and like was a go-to scorer for this team and was a little bit inefficient and maybe at times just a tiny bit overmatched, and saw himself drop to the second round after being a consensus top five prospect basically going into the season, versus Shaedon Sharpe, another guy who's in that same sort of range, basically sat out for a year, like practiced with but did not play for Kentucky, and didn't see his stock drop at all because just no one got any bad tape on him.
Exactly.
It's really hard to say that one of them is actually better than the other.
Exactly. Right. It's like, well, this guy didn't play at all. And that actually leads us into, well, I'm going to save him for last. But, you know, you have one guy that's like, well, we haven't seen him play at all. But it's sort of Schrodinger's cat. Like, you haven't seen him play at all, which means he could be really good or he could be really bad. He could be both at the same time. We don't know yet. Right. Versus this guy who we have seen and we can pick apart every piece of his game over and over and over again. So that's Tamar. Moving on real quick, two college guys. These guys are probably neck and neck as far as being looked at as the best college bat. So we talked about college bats early on. That's Brooks Lee and Kevin Parada. It's probably, you know, six in one hand, half a dozen in the other as far as who's the better hitter from the college standpoint. Brooks Lee is a shortstop currently. He played for his dad at Cal Poly. And I think from what I've read, at least, it seems like he could stick at shortstop. It does seem likely that he ends up at third base kind of as the main position for him at the major league level. And then Kevin Parada is the catcher for Georgia Tech as they continue their run of churning out catchers that are high draft picks. This is their, third or fourth guy in a row almost that they've had. And both of them just have tremendous skill set, not just from the power standpoint, but again, the bat to ball skills for both of them are quite special, being able to use the whole field, having a very good approach of understanding, pitch recognition and understanding exactly what pitch is theirs to go after and target, as far as being able to drive. So I think both of those guys, Parada being a catcher, obviously, the barrier to being a good major league catcher is a bit low and is continued to kind of lower as we contemplate automatic strike zones. And, you know, if they're going to change anything with the bases at the major league level, which they've already done at some of the minor league levels, you know, certain things that we knew to be true about things that you needed from catchers at the major league level are starting to change. And now it's almost all starting to fall on. Can they hit and can they hit enough? And I think Kevin Parada definitely answers that question. So I'll be curious to see what team picks him up. And Brooks Lee, like I said, shortstop, son of a coach. You always love son of a coach. Just like, you know, it's like the second best thing to being son of a ball player, right? It's like, oh, son of a coach. He's very knowledgeable. Coach on the field, all that sort of stuff. But he definitely shows up. It's not just the intangibles. It's the tangible stuff too. So I could see him being anywhere from number five-ish, maybe the other half of the top 10. I'd be surprised if he falls out of the top 10 just because he's hit so well, especially this past season at Cal Poly. And then the name, the guy that I'm going to end this little summary with is Kumar Rocker. This is a name that even if you don't pay any attention to the MLB draft, you probably have heard, you probably do know. He had a whole saga with the Mets, being selected by the Mets number 12 last year. So there was already some surprise that he dropped out of the top 10, and then the Mets selected him and they couldn't come to an agreement, and he doesn't sign with the Mets because the NCAA is a cartel. He's not able to play in the NCAA anymore because they deem him ineligible. So he was kind of in the baseball wilderness for a little bit. There's all sort of speculation about why the Mets didn't or why they couldn't come to an agreement, why he didn't sign. A lot of speculation was about his medical information, would he, you know, how much of it he would release and what they'd learned from it, et cetera, et cetera. We have recently learned from his agent, from Kumar Rocker's agent, that he has had what was described as quote unquote minor shoulder surgery. Take that with a grain of salt because it's coming from the agent. So what else is he really going to say? But he has been playing in the Frontier League with the Tri-City Valley Cats. Frontier League.
Beautiful team.
Yeah, great team. I had to make sure I got it because I had it as Tri-Valley And I was like, no, it's Tri-City Valley Cats. I got to make sure. And Valley Cats is one word, but two capitals. So I appreciate that. As somebody who has two capitals in my name, I appreciate the two double capitals in Valley Cats. So he's been playing for them. And the first start was like highly anticipated, as you can imagine. And from what scouts and analysts, evaluators were saying, he looked quite good. The question was, can he repeat it? That was one start. Can he do it again? And he's had multiple starts so far. Velocities has remained in the high 90s, just like when he was at Vanderbilt. He was able to go multiple innings in multiple appearances. So, of course, any sort of time you have any sort of shoulder or any sort of arm concern, you want to see how does the stamina hold up. Looks like it's holding up so good, so far so good. So I think the question becomes, when he gets selected, because he definitely will be drafted, and I think he will be drafted quite highly, and we're going to talk about that in 1 second, what are the actual medicals, and what is he going to do? Because his leverage has kind of been used up, right? Like, is he going to, I don't see him being like, oh, I'm not going to sign for that amount, so I'm going to play for Tri-City again for another season until I get the number that I'm looking for. So his leverage is not as much as it was last season. At the same time, though, I do see some teams still wanting to really, really kick the tires and make sure medically the Kumar Rocker they're getting is as sound as can be. So he's a very interesting name to watch, where he goes, who he goes to, and then does he actually sign and how much he actually signs for.
Yeah, I have to imagine in his case, again, this is all spitballing because I do not work for an agent and I do not work for a team, obviously. But I have to imagine round two, the Mets in like last year's iteration of the Mets are not involved. You know, he could sign for someone who's dumb in theory. Like, imagine a world. I saw one mock draft where this happened where he goes to the Rockies because they can never get their hands on decent pitching and they give him an aggressive assignment and a reasonable bonus because, like, why else would you want to go to the Rockies? And, you know, he's in their rotation like next year. That's not insane to me for a path for him, because then that gives him a pathway to like hit arbitration still in a reasonable timetable. That has to be at least a little bit of like a thing you'd care about if you're a guy like him who has to see himself as a potential like top tier ish front, like frontline ish MLB starter, or at least someone who's going to reach a second contract.
Yeah. I mean,
you want to hit the MLB soon.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. My mind didn't even go there. So thank you for bringing that up. That's a great point of thinking about already trying to be into MLB player mode of how this will impact my contract negotiations for getting the big money, right? Not the rookie contract, but the next contract, because that's what it's always about. What I was thinking, and this kind of bleeds into our next topic, is if you're Kumar Rocker, you got to be thinking, I'm hands down the best pitcher in this draft. Right. I was arguably the best pitcher in last year's draft. And there's no reason to think I'm not the best pitcher in this year's draft. And I've actually done it. Now, yes. Is it an unaffiliated Frontier League is unaffiliated ball? Yes, technically they are. But that's more so logistics than anything else, because the Valley Cats were a minor league team 2 years ago. So not like they're just, you know, this isn't a beer league. Right. Like, these are guys trying to break into Major League Baseball, guys that were on that pathway. So the competition that he's playing up against, they're not nobodies. So if you're Rocker, you're thinking, I've shown you that I have answered your questions medically. From his standpoint, he's probably thinking, I've answered your questions medically. I was arguably the best pitcher in last year's draft. Last year's draft class definitely is better than, pitching wise, definitely is better than this year's draft class.
Yeah, so we should get into that as well.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm saying all that, and this bleeds into our next question, trends that you'll see in this year's class, a lot of injured pitchers, a lot of guys that were looked at and thought to be very high in their standing to go in this draft class that ended up being injured, a lot of times season ending surgery. Connor Prelip, Peyton Pallett, Hunter Barco, a lot of guys getting Tommy John surgery or other sort of elbow and shoulder surgeries that shut down their season, or in some cases they didn't even start the year at all. And that really diminished this year's pitching class from the college standpoint. High school wise, again, the consensus has flipped. So high school pitchers aren't necessarily as highly sought out by many teams. There are some teams that still love them, some high school pitching. But a lot of teams have kind of been turned off of them just because, again, that development cycle and the variance of high school pitching, you have to be very, very, very good in a lot of teams' eyes to be of value to them as like a first round draft pick coming out of high school. So this year's overall pitching class is really seen to have taken a nosedive. You're going to probably see a lot more hitters taken than what you would have had we had healthier guys. And I think that's even more reason, just to put a button on the Kumar Rocker thing, I think that's even more reason why he's probably, in my opinion, he's probably going to be the first pitcher off the board wherever he goes. And I think he's going to use that to his advantage as best as he probably can.
Yeah, I like doubling down on all of these potential hypothetical concerns. I remember a name that popped up onto my radar a few months ago was, and I'll make sure I get the first name right here, Dylan Lesko, who is like, and tell me where I'm wrong here, like a potential top five pick as a high school pitcher who then got Tommy John in April and might still go in the, like the mid first round.
Right. And
that seems like all of the risk.
Yeah.
And yet.
Yeah. And I think for Lesko, it's a matter of because he got Tommy John so early that the rehab cycle he's already in the midst of. So versus a guy who may have just now, I shouldn't say just now because the college season is over, but maybe a guy who got Tommy John or any sort of surgery later on in, you know, late May and June, and now you're talking about getting drafted, he's a couple more months behind in that rehab process, getting that done in a March or in April, where it's just, it's a known thing. Hey, this is done. You got the surgery. You're already rehabbing. I could definitely see teams looking at Lesko and then, you know, we're okay with taking that risk, because we already will know where he is in the process and know how to slot him in medically with our team and our trainers, et cetera. And then be able to, you know, once he comes back in 2023, then we'll be able to kind of take it from there. And it's almost like we got a free ad, so to speak, to use kind of fantasy parlance, right? You got kind of a free ad of a player because you're getting in 2023, essentially a top 10 type of draft pick without having to use up a draft pick.
Yeah. I'm curious in your mind, like what sorts of teams are more likely to pursue those sorts of players? On one hand, I can imagine the like sort of aggressive because they're already good. They've got the money. So you may as well swing for the fences sorts of teams might be interested in these guys. But on the other hand, like I can imagine the absolutely need something to break right to get out of the middle sorts of teams might see it. So like I'm curious, is like, is it just everybody or that depends on the GM?
Yeah, like, I would say it depends on the GM, and I'll be honest, I'm still learning a lot about, and that's another reason why I really want to pay attention to this year's draft, because I'm still learning a lot about front office and their player profiles and development philosophies and things of that nature, especially when it comes to pitching, because that is so much more kind of art and science combined. And it varies so much. So I wish I was more of an expert to really peg a couple of teams to him. What I will say though, is that last sort of group that you described, that sort of sticky middle, that we're not terrible, we're not tanking, but we can't ever really seem to get forward momentum to be actual contenders. That could be a team that I could see taking a flyer and just saying, you know what, they're not picking top 10. So from a money standpoint, you're not committing a ton of money to him. He is a high schooler, so we talked about signability, but you have the leverage of, hey, you were injured. This might be the best money that you're getting now. You're hoping that you rehab and go to college and have just a good year where you could just be a professional baseball player if you take this deal now. So you could kind of use that injury as leverage against them. I could see a team that is picking number, and I don't have the draft order in front of me. So a team that's picking number 14, a team that's picking number 16, maybe, you know, saying, yeah, we'll take the flyer on this guy, maybe be able to actually save some money because we can use that injury piece against them to get the signing costs down. And then we still feel good about getting some high floor guys on the back end, second and third round, so that we're not sinking all of the value into just this one injured high schooler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can also imagine some teams that maybe then have some of those comp round picks who have a couple early shots might be especially interested. If I'm just kind of putting the pieces together, I see very much, though, why it seems like it's a puzzle where there's a whole lot of hidden motivations and, you know, there's a game beyond the game to pay attention to. So, you know, we got a week or so until the draft. There's a lot of stuff that we will learn, but it seems like a lot worth learning. We've hit a lot of the big names here, the people that I feel like are going to be going maybe at the top of the first year player draft boards, you know, the essentials. You want to get weird and talk about some of your like pet favorites among like the late first guys or whoever else you want to, you know, highlight here?
If you listen to On the Farm, you know, I love getting weird. So I have no problem with getting a little bit deeper. I don't want to get like overly esoteric with guys because, again, I'm still kind of doing my knowledge as well. So I have some guys on here that I can probably put to the side. I will throw out one name that I'm still trying to learn about, and that's Cade Horton. And Cade Horton has, thanks to College World Series, really seen his stock rise. We were talking about best pitchers in this draft and how Kumar Rocker probably is thinking, that's me, hands down. I will say Cade Horton has really been able to leverage this his own personal success, again, in the College World Series, which, again, just like if we stick with basketball, just like with the NCAA tournament, you know, it's all the eyeballs are on you. It's the highest competition overall. So that really helps. But also that matched with all of these injured guys that haven't been able to perform. So I'd be curious to see exactly how much helium he has. Does he get to crack into top 15 draft pick now, where he wasn't being considered that 2 months ago? So that's just one quick name, Cade Horton, to throw out there.
He was Oklahoma, right?
That sounds right. I should have that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not allowed to cheer for anyone who went to the University of Oklahoma or who associates themselves with that place. and it is deeply disappointing that to know that the underdog Texas Longhorns did not win the College World Series this year. But best of luck to Cade Horton. I read just a tiny bit about him, actually. You're getting esoteric here, but like I'm sure the weird heads everywhere are kind of like, this is a fun storyline. Didn't he like miss the year before this, so he just like basically doesn't have a track record and that's why he's popping up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm grabbing just searching right now, and yeah, former two sport athlete. So
well,
yeah, love again athleticism. You love that out of any player that you're drafting. So yeah, he was just a guy, like I said, I'm still learning. I'll be completely honest. I don't know a ton about him.
He popped
up onto my radar just as Oklahoma was making their run through the World Series. And now people are like, hey, you know, he's really probably made himself a good little chunk of money based on how well he was pitching. So I'm curious to learn and hear more about him. But some guys that I actually was doing some more actual digging into, this guy, I was doing some last minute sort of like writing some bullet points about him today in preparation for the pod. And he might have sold me on like liking him from a fantasy standpoint. That's Cam Collier. Cam Collier, I believe this is accurate to say, is the youngest potential draftee in this draft at 17 years old. He actually graduated high school early with his GED and enrolled in JUCO college, so he could reclassify into this year's draft. But this is a guy who has incredibly quick hands. Again, quiet setup. That's my personal thing. Again, the aesthetics, that's just me. But he's somebody who has really good, has a really good hit tool. And he looks to be somebody who profiles as hit tool first, then power. So what that means, just to kind of break that down, is there are players who show the ability, and it's everything that goes into hit tool, pitch recognition, approach, actual mechanics of their swing, their ability to keep the bat in the bat barrel in the zone for a longer period of time, all those things to develop into being a very good hitter first. And then as they both fill out, so they add more strength and they also just get more experience as they get older, that's when the power comes, because then they can really start to pick out pitches that they can drive and get that backspin on to hit for home runs. And he looks like he could fit into that mold and really be an impact bat. Obviously, he's super young. So again, that variance, it can go all over the place, especially when you look at the experience playing at a JUCO, not necessarily the same as playing at a Power 5 D1 school. However, he has played some in the Cape Cod League, which is summer league for draft eligible players to play in. And he seems to have shown himself to quite well. And that's going to be, you know, some higher competition in that standpoint. So this is a guy defensively looks like he'll be at third. I think there's some question about he could get moved into a corner spot again as he fills out. If he gets a little bit thick around the middle, he could go to a corner spot. Another two-way player. So he's a guy that pitched, has a very live arm. So I think that's the reason why defensively at third
base. Yeah.
He seems to be good there. So Cam Collier, I've seen draft mocks that have him quite high. I've seen him where he's more in the teens. So I think he can kind of go all over the map, excuse me. But that's a guy that I'm looking at. And again, I'm thinking about this from a fantasy standpoint, but I'm just very interested to see who takes him, where he goes, and again, just what that development looks like. Is he somebody that's going to take quite a long period of time, or is he somebody that gets, you know, a little bit fast tracked and shows up to be kind of a good value? I think about a guy, he was a bit older, but I think about a guy like Evan Carter being quite young, getting drafted in the second round, I believe, by the Rangers in the 2020 draft as a high schooler. And I mean, he's in high A right now, and he's looking like he should finish up this year in double A easily. Like, he's right on the cusp, and he's flying through the competition just because his skills are very, very good. Not saying it's a one-to-one comparison, but you do have those guys that are young, but they show up very well, and the level of competition almost doesn't really mean anything to them. So Cam Collier is a name that I'm watching there.
You lead into something that I think is a curiosity for me. You know, we named a lot of guys here. They make a good number of different kind of like cases for like what sorts of guys you might be interested in, how they might fit, and why you would or wouldn't believe in them. But also, like, we haven't seen them match up necessarily against top end talent, all of them. And it's hard to understand exactly how valuable a first round pick is and what we should expect out of them. So let's take a quick look back at last year's draft and talk about any guys there that, you know, you feel like really teach us anything important, or besides Kumar Rocker, of course, in terms of like how quickly we can like change our mind on a player. Is there anyone from last year's draft that like really sticks out for you in that sort of way?
I'll be honest, like 2020 and 2021 are blending together, so I don't want to trust myself to name a name, and people be like, idiot, that was 2020 instead of 2021.
Oh, no. By all means, though, reach back twice if you need to. Past couple years all do blend together. That's a totally fine point.
Let me see here. Some guys that I think from a positive standpoint, let's start there, right? From a positive standpoint, I think when you look at that top 10, and again, we'll top nine because we'll subtract Kumar Rocker out of that mix. But when you look at, Jack Leiter, I'll start with him, right? The other pitcher out of Vanderbilt, right? The other guy that was kind of vying with Kumar Rocker as who's the best pitcher in the 2021 draft. I think with Leiter, he's been kind of everything that Texas wanted him to be. He's at AA now. Now he's kind of running into some of his first real obstacles, which is good. That's a big part of the development cycle. Is like, yes, you love to see guys ideally just like fly through, have success, hit the majors, and like be superstars. Like, that's ideal. That doesn't happen for a reason. I like to see guys have a run of, especially in the upper minors, AA, AAA, run into some adversity, right? Run into some, these guys are really good hitters if I'm a pitcher. These guys are really good pitchers if I'm, and defenders if I'm a hitter, right? The balls that were up the middle and easy base hits for me when I was in low A, oh, they have shortstops that can actually get to that ball and throw me out. Okay, that's different, right? Like, just that sort of adjustment. And then being able to make the adjustment on the adjustment, as they say, right? Okay, these guys are good, but I can do these other things that can show up very well. So I think Jack Leiter is in that mix right now for Texas. And so I think that they should be feeling very happy about their draft pick. Jordan Lawler is doing an excellent job. They just promoted him to high A.
He was sixth last year for the Diamondbacks.
Right. So for the Diamondbacks, they just promoted him. And he's been looking like everything that they wanted out of a shortstop. And I think Lawler actually has a very interesting team dynamic. And I know we didn't talk about team dynamics too much, but Geraldo Perdomo is kind of the young shortstop ahead of him. And I don't think that that's going to be for much longer. Like, I don't think Perdomo is a long-term assault. Right. Like, he's just,
I remember he got promoted and it was just like, cool, this is a guy who's on the Diamondbacks roster. And if he gets better, then he's a guy who's on the Diamondbacks roster. Yeah. And you're good as a bench batter, as a utility guy.
Yeah. And I think, he was more glove first. He did not hit very well. Perdomo, that is, did not hit very well in his first stint. They sent him down. He made some adjustments. He's hit a little bit better, but I still don't think you're going to see the dynamic bat out of him versus how good of a defensive player he is. So Lawler has some space, right? If he continues to develop at this pace that he's at, where in another couple of years, that shortstop position could very well be his, right? There's not a whole lot blocking him from that being the case. So, so those are some of the guys that I think of from the 2021 standpoint that teams looking back just a year later should be, you know, still quite happy about, like, hey, you know, we're doing all right. If we think about guys that maybe a team wants another bite of the apple, and again, this is it's only a year out, so like it's always hard to think about. I don't know that there's necessarily first round guys. That's the other thing. There might be guys that get deeper into the draft, but let's see here. I'm pulling up things here. So we got Lawler. So this might be, and I'm sorry, Kansas City, I'm sorry to be picking on y'all, but Frank Mazzucato, he's not terrible. So I'm not saying that, but my concern is like Kansas City had this like bushel of young pitching talent that they were supposed to be developing, and it hasn't really worked to plan as of yet. Mm-hmm. And so that just makes me a little more concerned about Mazzucato. They do have some good things. Like Brady Singer looks like he's kind of starting to click into place now. It just took him a little bit longer. But, you know, Jackson Kowar still hasn't really figured it out. Daniel Lynch is still very up and down. You have Mazzucato, you have Ben Kerner, and I might not be pronouncing that last name correctly, but you have Ben Kerner. You have some other guys that they have in the lower minors that now, just because of what we've seen before, it makes me hesitant. I will say this. I've had these discussions with other people that are into prospecting that disagree with me having that perspective. They're very much like, hey, just because, you know, previous iterations or previous players have not worked out, that's not an indicator that this particular player will follow the same fate, which I think is accurate. It just, for me, I'm risk averse. And again, I'm seeing this through a fantasy lens. So if I'm like, well, the first three pitchers that you guys drafted, you haven't figured out what makes this guy the fourth pitcher so special that he's going to get, you know, he's going to click where these other guys haven't. It could happen. I'm just not the person to bank on it. So Mazzucato is one. I talked about Benny Montgomery on my stock up, stock down for the NL West last week farm. And I've never been a Benny Montgomery fan. He has gotten a little bit warmer in the last week as far as his production, but and even keeping the Rockies team context out of it, he doesn't move me to say things. Somebody real quick, I'm bouncing back and forth, but real quick, somebody that I think is really good value that they got was the Phillies getting Andrew Painter at number 13.
Yeah, I was just about to bring him up.
He's looked outstanding, and I don't even know if people thought that he was going to look. I mean, right now, if you look at the pitchers that were taken in the first round, and that includes Jack Leiter, who, again, he's at AA, he's looking very well. I think you could make a case that Painter right now is the best out of this bunch, right? You have Gavin Williams is good. Wicks is good. I'm literally just looking at names. Brunts, all these guys are good, but I think it really is like Painter and Leiter, and I would give it to Painter right now.
Yeah, just for some context for those of y'all who aren't like looking at the same thing that we are. So Mazzucato is like a young four high school 6'3 lefty that went 7th overall and considerably under slot. For the same amount of signing bonus, he got like $3.5 million for the 7th pick. I should note that Painter got $3.9 million for the 13th pick, and then Gavin Williams got $2.25 million at the 23rd pick. Mm-hmm. There were some people like MLB Pipeline or whoever, I guess I'm using their ranks here just for like a quick like take a look at this because it's interesting. They had both Williams and Painter considerably ahead of Mazzucato. So you had to think that they really thought they had something and that they were getting, you know, like that extra money saved. Yeah. So there's definitely some we think we're galaxy brain.
Yeah, here. And that fits into what your point was earlier, Alex, about are there certain front offices that have certain types, right? Because if you look back through what Kansas City has been drafting in the first couple of rounds over the last few drafts, tall, projectable, not always lefty. Lynch is left-handed, obviously, along with Mazzucato, but tall, projectable pitchers, mostly out of high school. A couple of them, I think, were college, but like not a lot of bats outside. Obviously, you have Bobby Witt Jr. That was more of like a no-brainer, but they do seem to be following a certain standard, a certain type. We know the Angels drafted Sam Backman. They tried to draft pretty much every pitcher that existed last year. Like the amount of pitching that the Angels drafted, literally that's the type that you were indicating earlier about like something has to stick. The Angels have always struggled to have good pitching. And it literally looked like last year they were finally just saying the quiet part loud of we are terrible at having pitchers, so we're just going to draft nothing but pitchers, and one of these guys have to be good enough. So, and we're waiting to see. Backman's looked okay. They have another guy, Brett Carey, who's had a pretty good 2020 season, but nobody that's necessarily standing out like Andrew Painter is. So, the Angels, that's another team that could be that middle pack. Maybe there's somebody that takes a chance on Lesko, right? That says that, right, hey, we were going to keep going with that pitching until we get it right. So yeah, that it's very interesting to look back. Again, it's only 1 year. A lot of these guys, just looking through the names outside of Leiter and I think that might Leiter and Frelick, who Sal Frelick, who came out of Boston College, so another college bat. Most of these guys are not even in AA yet. Most of them are still in the mm-hmm. lower minors. So, I mean, yeah, you're still talking about people that are quite young, a lot left as far as their projection ability for talent, along with how they're growing. But, yeah, you're already seeing some of these guys are looking like really good value, and some of them you start to wonder, like, oh, you know, that doesn't mean they're bad, but if they could redraft today, their team is probably picking somebody else.
Yeah, I think that's not unreasonable. And to like put that even like further into context, I think a final exercise we do here before we log off and fester for the next week about who's going to get drafted and where. I wanted to go back 5 years just to kind of like give people a window into things. We won't spend too long here and take a look at the first round of the 2017 Major League Draft. Nothing scientific I'm doing here. I literally just have the Wikipedia page open for the 2017 Major League Draft, and obviously we've watched enough of these guys to know who we're talking about. I encourage you, if you're at home and not currently operating a motor vehicle on the interstate, to swipe through a couple of these drafts on your own. It's kind of fun to check out how well a lot of these prospects have actually panned out. The top 10 this year, first overall was Royce Lewis, second was Hunter Green, third Mackenzie Gore,
Fourth, Brendan McKay. Fifth is Kyle Wright. Sixth is Austin Beck. And if you don't know who that is, that's for good reason. He has not done anything in the minors. Seventh is Paven Smith. Eighth is Adam Hazley. Ninth is Keston Hira. And 10th is Joe Adell. All of those picks, aside from the sixth, Austin Beck, who is not an underslot pick, I should note. They paid $5 million signing bonus 5 years ago. He was supposed to be something and he wasn't. Had their moment in the major leagues as like a top end prospect that we were excited about. Those guys, for the most part, didn't flame out before the majors. And like Brendan McKay's had some definitely injury related struggles that have kept him from access everything. Keston Hira has been up and down. Adam Hazley's been a Phillies prospect. So, you know, whatever. But there's been a definitive moment for like most of these guys where something has clicked. You go further down the list and there's a lot of other names in the first round that are really something. Shane Baz, 12th, Trevor Rogers, was 13th in this draft. DL Hall, who should be up soon and looks like he could be something, was the 21st pick. Helio Ramos for the Giants was the 19th pick. Tanner Houck was the 24th in this draft. There are a couple other names who either like haven't quite made it or, you know, hasn't been something. Like David Peterson was in the first round for this draft for the Mets. He's been kind of mid, but it's something. Alex Fado for the Tigers, who had a really good debut this year, is in this draft. And then Evan White for the Seattle Mariners, who has a lot of money in the bank to not play baseball for the most part. This is the 17th pick. Yeah. So take a pick of a year. I know the 2011 draft is a really fun one. Also, if you want to take a look a little more than 10 years back now, a lot of talent in that one. I remember the Ringer MLB show. I think it was either them or I think it might have been Baseball Barbecue on the Ringer MLB feed, which they're both gone. So I can tell you to go listen to them because there's neither of our competition. Big sad there. I don't know if you're ever a Baseball Barbecue podcast listener, but that was one of my faves. They took a look back at that draft last year around this time, and it was really fun to see just how many of those dudes have fully panned out.
I'm going to shamelessly plug On the Farm old episode. If you go to episode 28 and 29, we did a 2018 draft retrospective. So we talked about guys like Casey Mize, Joey Bart, Alec Bohm. I'm literally going down a list of Nick Madrigal, Jonathan India, Rookie of the Year. So, and somebody you may have heard of, a guy by the name of Jared Kelenic. I don't know if you have heard anything about things that have gone on with him in the last couple of years. But like you're saying, Alex, like if you go back those four or five, and then definitely if you're talking about like 10 years, I think if you go back into like 10 years, it's really interesting to see what you were talking about, the shift of thinking, because you can really see it in who got drafted, right? You can see the shift of thinking. But even if you just go back the 4 or 5 years and see how many of those guys have made their debuts, what they've looked like, how many of those guys have shifted, if anybody's gotten traded, and how many of those guys are who we thought they were, to use the quote, like they are who we thought they were. Like how many of them are who we thought they were, and how many of them are like, oh, there was something else in the game, or they were lacking something that we thought they had in their game now that they're actually at the major league level. Again, I'm always looking through fantasy lens, and I have to emphasize that because fantasy and real life are different.
Not the same thing.
The same thing, as we should know if we're like, older than 5 years old.
Drew Jones is going to go first if he goes first, in large part because of defensive stats that will never help our fantasy teams, but will keep him in the lineup. Right. So maybe that is a help.
Right. So I always like to put that out there, but even from a real life standpoint, it's super informative to take a look. And especially if you have a favorite team, to look back over the past couple of years so you can see what their front office really prioritizes. And if you see that shift, because again, to use, wrap up with the Orioles, we started with the Orioles to finish with the Orioles. You know, Mike Elias, this is his fourth, fifth year, as the GM. So the Dan Duquette years, all those guys are pretty much run through the system, right? Like we've either traded them out, got them up, like they're moving on. So all the guys that are in the minors now, whether they're of value or not, pretty much all now Elias guys. And now we get to see, okay, is Elias and company really the brain trust that we got sold on when they came from Houston? Of like, well, Houston did it, so now they're going to do the same thing to the Orioles, Or Are there going to be some very high profile misses? So far, so good, right? Adley's has come up, looks good. Grayrod was prepared to come up, obviously got injured. We just heard back that Scans came back clean on his lat strain, so he's mm-hmm. right there on the cusp of coming up. So far, so good. DL Hall, like you mentioned, he's looking really good. So far, so good, but is it going to continue? And this year is going to be very interesting to see. Are they going to continue to go under slot? Are they going to leave Drew Jones on the table to go for a college bat that's going to be a lot cheaper? And then what does that do on the back end? Like, who are they going to pick up to sell the fans on the fact that it was worth not picking Drew Jones because we got this guy in the third round? We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, the Orioles do have the 33rd pick, mm-hmm. supplemental pick, and then they'll have like the very first of the second mm-hmm. round as well. So they'll have some options. Mm-hmm. But
man, I would love if they established pick trading. If they can get that done, yeah, I think it would be fantastic to see, because I think there are going to be some teams that will completely crash and burn their franchises by making
speed run the stuffy end rule. See how fast we can get there. My like hypothetical like pet peeve thing that I'm so prepared to be annoyed about is when the Orioles do inevitably actually draft Drew Jones, him being a right-handed bat, you know, in New Camden Yards, he's gonna hit like 3 home runs at home ever in his career. That's gonna be really fun.
Well,
the thing is though, they'll need his outfield defense to cover left center field, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, so I was on the – so this is something that I was very wrong about. They moved the fences in left field, and at first I was like, it shouldn't make that big of a difference. And then there was writing that was coming out that was saying
– I was apoplectic.
Yeah, there was the writing that was coming out immediately being like, look at these home runs. Look at Ryan Mountcastle's home runs. Look at how many home runs he wouldn't have if left field was like this. And I will say, like, yes, it has changed the environment. Mike Trout hit a home run last night, and they were saying it was Matt Vasgersian doing the LA Angels broadcast, and he was saying he hit it to the one part of left field that's still a short porch, because it literally was like right down the left field line around the foul pole. But the trade-off is, if that means that Adley hits 35 home runs, then I think we're okay with it, because he's going to Utah Street. So like, it's okay. Like it's a trade off. And also, if that means that Grayrod and D.O. Hall and Kyle Bradish and all those guys, if that means that they're giving up, 20% less home runs, I think we're okay with that.
Oh, it might be more than that, right? By my math, it's something like half as many.
Yeah.
To that like third of the field.
I think we're okay.
We can talk about the Orioles indefinitely. I can't wait to do it again eventually. And this has been great. So you want to tell us really quickly where we can find you online and wherever else?
Yeah, absolutely. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Inside Fastball, capital I, capital F. You can find me hosting On the Farm, which is typically a weekly podcast that is up on Mondays. And that's on the Pitcher List Podcast Network, of course. I have a free newsletter that I make on a monthly basis that you can sign up for. That is at Inside Fastball Newsletter. You can find it on my Twitter page. You can tweet at me. You can email me if you wanted to. That's Inside Fastball Newsletter at gmail.com if you want to send me an email for some reason. And I'm on the Discord. I'm on the Pitcher List server, too. So you can find me there. I think that's every. Oh, Reddit. I'm trying to be more active on Reddit, on Scott Shoes AMAs that he has on Friday. So you'll see me lurking in there on the AMAs as well.
Nice. That is a ton of places to be.
Yeah.
It's a good thing that you've got plenty to say and plenty worth listening to.
Thank you.
So this has to be one of our longest pods in recent memory, and it's been nothing but a joy. Can't wait to catch up with you soon. And that'll be it for this episode of Dugout Study Hall.
Thanks for having
me. You can find me on Twitter at Chase_Rate. And you can find our missing host, Matt Goodwin, there at The Corked Matt. You can also find our pod there at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us questions. Our DMs are open. Please sure to subscribe to both the Pitcherless Fantasy Baseball feed, where you can find us, as well as the Pitcherless Baseball Podcast feed. Leave us a good review if you feel so kind. And if you haven't already, consider becoming a PL Plus member so you can harass us in Discord. Thanks for listening, and you can catch both Matt and myself next time.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food and Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.